The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Several hospitals around the country are being stretched to the limit at the moment, with a perfect storm of increased COVID admissions, staffing shortages and rising trolley numbers all contributing. For more on this, I'm joined now by the General Secretary of the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation, Philney Hay, and to get some insight into the issues affecting University Hospital Kerry, I'm also joined by Kerry GP, Dr. Gary Stack. But Phil, we'll go to you first. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Can you paint a picture of the situation around the country?
Well, our members are telling us, working in hospitals particularly, that the hospitals are very overcrowded. This is like, you know, the normal occurrence, I suppose, every winter, even though it's October. But they've been basically concerned, and as you know, we count the trolleys on a daily basis, but we've been flagging since mid-July that these numbers are going the wrong way. We had numbers this winter, last winter rather, and we saw those numbers much earlier this year. So in other words, our hospitals were overcrowded much earlier. And combining that with an airborne infection, we're saying this is extremely, extremely dangerous. You can't have an overcrowded situation when you have in any event, it's not a good idea. And we're always striving to make sure that the hospitals can cope with the volume that they are met with. But when you have an airborne infectious pandemic, it's an absolute disaster. The staff themselves then, of course, are extremely tired. They are working now in this environment for a very long time. They're working with two services. In reality, you have a COVID service and a non-COVID service, which have one workforce. They're not satisfied that these work environments are safe. They're not safe for patients, and they're certainly not safe for staff. And we've seen now, unfortunately, the infection rate among healthcare workers on the increase again over the past month. So that's very worrying. And when you combine that with all of the evidence that we have a decreasing efficacy of some of the vaccines, and healthcare workers got their vaccines very early, we've obviously been looking for an immediate answer on the booster for healthcare workers.
Now, the question of the impact of the COVID-19 patients on the hospital systems generally, it's not simply a numbers game, because if you've got 500 people, say, in hospital with COVID, it's not like they're 500 people who are coming in for electives. They have to be treated differently, and they do eat up more resources.
Exactly. And I think one of the stark issues right now is people are attending the hospital because, you know, they don't feel well, but you don't know if they're COVID positive or not. They're not always coming to hospital with a predetermined diagnosis. So you have two streams to determine whether you have your test and you wait for the result. But during that period, you're treated as if you have COVID-19. Likewise, some diagnoses happen post-admission. And we know that this is a feature, always has been a feature of hospital care, that there are hospital-acquired infections. And our hospitals, many of them, are not suitable from a ventilation point of view. And this is another issue that we've been raising for quite a long period now with the HSE. They tell us they have done a report into the ventilation, and we're awaiting a copy of that, because that's extremely important. It's, you know, coming into winter, it's not always possible to have windows open, but there are a lot of spaces within hospital where there are no windows, and particularly in overcrowded areas and spaces now where you're placing patients, and also where staff are working. And I suppose the big thing right now is that going into winter, we know unless we get serious assistance immediately from the private hospital sector, if we keep doing elective work, and arguing that, oh, we have 95 beds left. We don't have any beds left in the public health system when we're counting over 500 trolleys. And on the trolley is an admitted patient for whom there isn't a bed. So it's nonsensical for the HSE to then say, oh, today we have, I think on Friday they were saying they had 95 surgical and medical beds available. But at that same time, there were over 400 people on trolleys for whom there are no beds.
So what is the discipline for your members throughout hospitals? I mean, do they have to go around in PPE all the time, you know, to be aware that there's a possibility of infection almost in every environment within the hospital setting?
Yes, that's the very strong recommendation. Unfortunately, some of the areas, for example, if for break taking, there is no area outside of the hospital. Best practice would be that you would consider the whole hospital to be an area where PPE, including corridors, etc. Mask wearing obviously is the standard, and when you're working in COVID areas, that standard becomes higher. We're very keen that the availability of the high-grade FFP3 masks are available in all areas where, not just our members, where healthcare assistants and nurses and other staff are working directly with patients, because we don't know every day if every patient is COVID positive or not. And that status can change. So we have to assume and therefore take the precautionary principle, which is the best practice.
Now, you mentioned how long your members have been facing up to this crisis. It began, almost 2 years ago now, when we first heard about the disease, but it hit Ireland with a bang in early March. And during the week, we were talking to Dr. Chris Luke, and he talked about burnout, having suffered from it himself. And one of the classic things about burnout is that people lose their empathy. They simply don't care as much as they did. Are you finding that in your members?
Yeah, I listened to that interview, and it is something that we've surveyed our members on, and Chris Luke is right. It's a feature of jobs like, you know, when you work in high-intensity areas like emergency departments, intensive cares, etc. Unfortunately, it is. We are finding that there is indications now, exhaustion and mental fatigue are one of the key indicators of burnout. Very, very high amongst the members that we surveyed. They are still, thankfully, saying to us that, you know, when they go to work, they concentrate on their job. They are absolutely physically, mentally exhausted. But one of the big indicators is their intention to leave. And for us, this is, as you know, Pat, we have been campaigning for years to get the correct staffing levels into our hospitals. And when we see high indicators of intention to leave, which is another frequent indicator of burnout, we get very nervous, because the system has to deal with that before it happens. Otherwise, we will not be able to open the beds we need. We will not be able to increase our ICU capacity. And it makes no sense when we know in advance that we're not dealing with it. So we've met with the HSE, we've met with them last week, we've put a number of proposals to them, and we've said to them, we do these surveys quite regularly and they are accurate. And we have a very clear indication now that the pandemic and the levels of staffing that have reduced, remember, a lot of our rosters now are not full because some nurses, midwives themselves have been infected. They're the highest cohort of workers who have been infected with COVID-19. So therefore, the rosters are depleted. So when you go to work, you're working with a lower number. And that's very, very difficult. And it's difficult, say, if it was 1 or 2 days a month. But when it's continuous since last February, well, then it's impossible.
Now, you have a catch-22 situation here, because in order to attract people to make up your numbers, it's got to be an attractive place to work, which it's not, because of the shortage of nurses. How do you address that problem to make it attractive, even though at the moment it cannot be?
Well, the only thing that's worked positively over the past 4 years is we have engaged with a scientific model to determine what are the correct staffing levels. The government have adopted that as its policy, and it is called the Framework for Nurse Staffing. And in effect, what that does is it examines how many nurses you need, how many healthcare assistants you need on each surgical and medical ward, and we have 265 of those across the country. The determinant then looks at, well, what are the effects of having the right numbers on these wards? And we did a pilot across 12 wards. It was incredible the difference it made to retention. So when you concentrate, have the right levels, retention was one of the positively, one of the main positive outcomes. So staff will continue to stay in areas that are staffed properly. And we also reduced the cost of providing the service because the cost of agency dropped by 82% on those wards. So the government adopted that as their policy. We have thought that it's funded on a yearly basis in order to implement it in every hospital across the country. And to date, it's only been implemented in 4 out of the 29 acute hospitals. Last year, very, very slow, no funding allocated in the budget. This year, and we're waiting for the minister to give the detail of the health spend to make sure that this is funded. This is their policy, it works.
But Phil, even if they supply the money, how do you magic up the people who are now, you know, perhaps in other countries or who have found jobs with pharmaceutical companies as reps or who have just given up or perhaps who've become agency staff when they can work as they choose to work rather than when they might be rostered to work?
Well, I suppose the first thing, Pat, is we have to make sure that those that are there don't leave. And that's the first thing. Second of all, we know from this pilot study that those that worked agency converted to direct hired when they saw a real focus on keeping the staffing levels correct on a ward. So once there's a focus on that, once if I go to work today into any ward in any hospital and I see, God, we're supposed to have 5 staff nurses on this morning and 2 healthcare assistants and they're there and we do our work and it's difficult, but it's doable. You know, I'll go home that night and I'll go in again tomorrow. But if I go in today and every day, and in that same ward, there's only 3 staff nurses and maybe 1 healthcare assistant, and we're getting calls from other wards to say, can you send somebody down to give us a hand? I'm not going to continue to work in that area. When you do not provide the correct nursing staffing levels, patients have poorer outcomes. The number of patients who have to be readmitted increases, the number of patients who have delayed care increases, and the number of patients who have missed care increases. So we don't understand why this is, when this is government policy, why the focus isn't on immediately getting it implemented, because it's a good idea for patients, it's a good idea for retention of nurses, and it saves money.
Finally, Phil, booster shots. What do you want to say to NIAC about the situation for your members?
NIAC is making its decision and they're recommending to government. I'm saying directly to government, and we wrote yesterday to both the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach, and actually also to the Minister for Health, saying that as an employer, they have an obligation to provide every available protection to workers. So NIAC makes the recommendation, but the employer and the employer of most nurses and midwives and other healthcare workers in the front line is the HSE. The HSE is obliged under the health and safety protocol, which came from an EU directive, because COVID-19 is classified as a biological hazard which healthcare staff are dealing with. And every available protection must be provided now to them. That includes vaccinations. And when we know and we have evidence that the infection rate among healthcare workers is on the increase, the efficacy of the vaccine they have received is on the wane, well, then the employer is obliged to provide a booster. So it is not an option not to provide a booster, and the delay is causing further infection. So we're saying to government, you need to make that decision today. I just can't understand why anybody would be dragging their feet on this.
Phil Ni Hay, General Secretary with the INMO, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you very much, Pat.
Well, I'm joined now by Kerry GP, Dr. Gary Stack, who's been listening to that conversation. Gary, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
Now, it's a fairly dispiriting picture that Phil paints. Tell me about what's happening in Kerry, because University Hospital Kerry has its own set of problems.
Yeah, I mean, some of them are very much related to what Phil was outlining with regard to retention of nurses, and I think that the solution that she outlined in trying to address that situation is quite positive, and if that is implemented, I think then you will be able to hold on to your nurses. But there certainly has been a significant lack of retention of nurses, and I believe that's particularly the case in UHK in Tralee. A lot of senior nurses have left over time, and it's very difficult to replace that level of experience.
Now, from a GP's point of view, what are you being told by the hospital authorities about referring people to UHK?
Well, I suppose I spoke previously about we had a letter from the surgical consultant saying that they could no longer accept any non-urgent outpatient referrals, that they weren't able to deal with them. Their day case list has been closed. They have no elective surgery, so they can't let anything out at the other end. So they said there's no point in referring non-urgent cases to them because they simply cannot deal with them. Then we had a letter from the casualty consultant saying basically much the same. That was a week later, saying that we could not refer any surgical patients to them with the expectation that they had an access to surgical outpatients. And they were basically being told not to refer surgical patient unless in the case of extreme emergency. I know that A&E in Tralee have been quite overcrowded. They're talking about figures up to 25% increase on 2019. So A&E is quite under pressure. They say they have increased level of complexity because people are presenting later, so that leads to more complex procedures, more complex investigations and longer hospital stays.
Now, to what extent is COVID at the heart of this problem? And without COVID, would the hospital be working quite well? Thank you very much.
I don't believe so, Patrick. I think this has always been a case over the summer months in Kerry where they have a warning level has been running at red the whole time. COVID certainly will have added to that, but I'm told there that it never goes to green, that the level is always at red because of the number of patients who are confined to trolleys and the overall level of activity in A&E.
So what is the reason for this? I mean, is it simply there aren't enough beds for the population? Because that's the kind of statistic you can look at across Europe, right across the OECD. You can look at population bases and how many acute beds and general beds are needed for that population.
Very much so. But, well, the bed's number one, and there are insufficient beds for the population that is there, for the ageing population, particularly that we have in more rural areas, and for the build-up that you get over the summer months, and particularly this year, obviously, most Irish people are holidaying at home, so that put extra pressure again. But that's only one part of it. You need the staffing, and particularly on the nursing side, you need to retain the experienced nurses that you have, and that is not happening there. There's obviously something endemic that they're having problems retaining the nurses. They need to look at why that is happening. I think Phil Nihe outlined potential solutions to that. On the medical side, there are significant delays in the appointment of replacement consultants. I think that the system of appointing consultants is too slow and too unwieldy. There are two new physicians appointed there. One of them is using his car as his office. The other, I believe, in haematology, was waiting on a microscope. So planning seems to be quite poor, planning ahead. They don't seem to have any independence to get things done themselves. Everything has to be run by the higher authority outside of Kerry, and I think that they're suffering as a result.
Yeah. Presumably the whole scheme of Sláinte Care and breaking up the HSE generally into regional systems might address some of that problem. But you know, it boils down to resources, whether it's human resources or technical resources. There is a huge shortage there, and yet we're throwing money at our health system like no other developed country.
That's true. I think there needs to be more medical involvement in the management side of it. Looking, if you're constantly using elective surgery as your default valve to stop elective surgery, you're going to get surgeons who are getting fed up of sitting around twiddling their thumbs. Surgeons like to operate. That's their job. They need to maintain their expertise. So if you have a situation where 6 months of the year you're not going to be able to do your routine surgical lists, then you're not going to attract attractive consultants or consultants who are willing to boost up the service. They will not be attracted to situations like that.
All right. Well, Gary, it's a bleak picture, and it doesn't look like it's going to be better anytime soon. You know, visitors told not to come to the university hospital carry.
I think they have facilitated a bit of that with social media. Like, I commend them for they have reached out, I think, to families and so on to arrange video calls, to send emails to patients. And I think that on the social media side of it has been quite active. But I think there certainly is what I would describe as a lake of unmet medical need behind the dam that is COVID at the moment. And that is hitting us, but that's only going to enlarge.
All right. Well, look, Gary, thank you very much for joining us. That's Dr. Gary Stack, who is a Kerry GP, outlining the specific problems at that Kerry hospital in Tralee. Some of the comments coming in. I'm an ICU nurse in a busy hospital in Dublin. Why this government will not pay proper overtime rates for ICU nurses, it would take the pressure off immensely instead of getting agency nurses who are not familiar with the working environment and not ICU trained. It's an unsafe practice. To increase efficiency in hospitals, move the staff within the hospital from departments that require them urgently. My experience over 35 years is that there are a lot of areas that are simply not busy at all, or the service would survive without so many nurses. Hospitals are not efficiently run, says another texter. Mary says, Phil is so right. Nursing is a fantastically satisfying job, but when you have a shift with a shortage of staff, it is hell, and you can't get to your work and have patients, you know, suffering from the lack of care that you physically cannot now do. You only get to the fully dependent or seriously unwell, and the less sick can get sick very quickly if not closely watched. It's an impossible situation long term, as there is no let up for nurses.